The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition, coming up today. Dortmund's Werder Bremen Werder points go disappearing act. Serie A, Kvaradona and the new Napoli. Ligue 1, PSG with M&M's new record. And La Liga, Fatty's still a good fit, a belt-tightening Barcelona. And how much will Real Madrid miss Casemiro? All that and more continental content in this Totally Football Show. Hello, listener. What do we got here? Oh, Tuesday, the 23rd of August. It's the Euro edition of the Totally Football Show. And yes, that means Julien Laurent, James Horncastle, Alvaro Romeo, and very shortly, a bit of Raphael Honig sign. Hi, everyone.
Bonjour.
Hello, James.
Wow. What a pan-continental salute that was. Jules, you're in France, aren't you?
I am indeed. Bonjour depuis la France.
Oui. Okay. Hey, who saw the game last night at Old Trafford? I imagine all of Europe was watching, no? What about in France, Jules?
Yeah, of course, it was live on Canal Plus, and a lot of people were watching, including me and the family, because we thought United are so rubbish, and Liverpool finally will kickstart the season. At Old Trafford, it's written, this is the way it's going to go, and it went complete other way.
It certainly did. Alvaro, were you tuned in?
Yes, of course, and I would like to say that if you went at that time at 8 p.m. UK time to the Marca and AS digital websites, that game was top of the news, ahead of the game that was played in La Liga at that time, which was Girona-Getafe. So there was plenty of interest for the game in Spain too.
Mm. What was the verdict over there?
Well, the verdict in Spain is that it was a very good Premier League game, again, like it was probably a good display window for the product. And also, most of the focus was at the beginning on Maguire and especially Cristiano Ronaldo being benched.
What was your take in France, Jules?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see the decisions made by Ten Hag before the game. Alvaro mentioned Cristiano and Maguire, of course. For us, that meant Raphael Varane was starting. So we had a close eye on how him and Lisandro Martinez did or were about to do in the game. Because I think that going forward now, I cannot see why after the game that we saw last night, and even if Liverpool were disappointing, which is true, I think there's something to work on for Varane and Martinez together. I think they complement each other quite well. It was interesting to see Tarek Malacia left back too. And he was obviously very involved in the first goal. But yeah, there was a lot of focus in France on the French players, of course, and Anthony Martial coming on. There's a few people who said to me that had Martial not been injured just before the start of the season, maybe things would have been a little bit different against Brighton and against Brentford, because he was such a key part of what Ten Hag wanted to do. And he was so good in pre-season that him missing out on those two games sort of messed up a little bit what Ten Hag had organized already and had worked on, because he was obviously very different. Once it was Christian Eriksen as the false nine, and the other time it was Cristiano as an anonymous nine instead of a false nine, if you want. So it was different to if Marcel had started those two first games. And now him coming on and having an impact on the game, I think was quite promising too. So yeah, we obviously watched it with a bit of a French focus, but we were also very disappointed by Liverpool's performance again.
Oui. Gazetta this morning says United renaissance, Sancho and Rashford close the crisis. Liverpool on the floor, they don't win anymore. They salute Ten Hag's courage. He's got the right ideas. James, was it that simple? You just had to drop Ronaldo, Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire and bingo, there's your team again. And are United really about to blow 100 million on Antony? What do your sources in Holland say?
Well, Gazzetta also, James, saying that per la prima volta nell'ultimo mese la squadra l'ha seguito. For the first time in the last month, United's players actually did what Ten Hag wanted. And I think, you know, Ronaldo, James, set the tone, didn't he, right from the beginning? He didn't play, but by refusing to shake the hand of Jamie Carragher... That was the kind of attitude that Ten Hag wanted his players to show on the pitch. He may not have shown that he can play football, as Ten Hag also said afterwards, but the rest of the team did. I kind of agree with the sentiment in the pink this morning about the courageous decisions he made. Jules will be happy to know that Varane was man of the match in Gazette.
Of course he was.
This morning. In terms of Anthony, James, feels like United just keep bidding. So I imagine by August 31st, the bid will be up to around 700 million. But we'll have to see what Ajax do. Not the only option, I suppose, available to United. You know, United seem to be able to get players now, Casemiro being in the stands. And again, you know, just his presence, his aura, having an effect on these players. So, you know, let's see what else they can do in the next fortnight. But, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer, James. So.
Well, indeed not. Alvaro, briefly, before we move on to the Euro stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Manchester United show a new energy. They didn't look worse than Liverpool in any aspect. I think Lisandro Martinez had set his eyes in this game and he was up for the challenge because this week he got many critics about his height, about him making it in the Premier League because he was too short, as if, you know, everyone in the Netherlands were relatives with Tyrion Lannister, you know. I mean, I think that there are many high and tall players in the Netherlands. And Lisandro was certainly one of the players of the game. And, you know, I would like to single out two more players very quickly. Marcus Rashford, I mean, not only he scored the goal, but also he did an excellent run, leaving behind Trent Alexander-Arnold, Harvey Elliott, Joe Gomez in the second half. He hadn't scored a goal since January. And, you know, it's normally not natural to come back to your best form in a game of this caliber, that number one. And number two, James Milner. He was hysterical the whole game. He was everywhere, but not doing the right thing anywhere on the pitch. And I think that this game is going to cost probably James Milner in the future and will remember his performance. I was thinking yesterday that since the Premier League implemented the 5 substitutions and all the leagues, basically, I thought that the taboo of replacing someone in the first half was going to be broken finally, but it hasn't because, you know, now, Jurgen Klopp, if he had removed James Milner for Fabinho in the first half, Liverpool would have improved enormously already in the first half. But he doesn't do it yet. And I think that there is a taboo that has to be broken here. If you have 5 substitutions, start doing the substitutions earlier in the game if you really have to.
There you go, Jurgen. Well, we'll have a little bit more on the clash at Old Trafford very shortly with Raphael Honigstein, who was there, speaking to us from the press room straight after the final whistle. But right now, fellas, let's get your moment to the weekend. Alvaro, why don't you kick it off?
Well, I will start with Ansu Fati because he did change the game against the Real Sociedad on Sunday. Barcelona won 4-1 and it looked difficult for Barcelona in the second half, but Ansu Fati came onto the pitch and he made the difference, not only giving 2 assists, well, one of them probably he didn't want to anyway, but the first assist to Ousmane Dembélé was class with the backheel pass, and also scoring 1 goal. So, you know, Barcelona is still taking precautions with Ansu Fati. He hasn't played the full 90 minutes for a very long time. But, you know, he makes the difference and he still has this scoring ability that makes him one of the most exciting footballers in the world right now, or at least exciting young footballers. So Ansu Fati, for sure, he deserves to be the one that protagonizes the moment of the week.
Nice. Fati, boom, boom. James Horncastle.
Lots to choose from. I'm going to go with Domenico Berardi's yes. Zidane-esque goal for Sassuolo against Lecce.
Il sinistro nel cuore dell'area, Baschirotto di testa e poi Berardi! Domenico Berardi!
That's what some of the pundits on Italian TV were drawing comparisons with. Berardi kind of knocked them down, saying Zidane's goal against Leverkusen in that Champions League final was better. And it was, but the skill and technique to pull off this goal, the ball seems to be in the air for hours. It then comes down and he hits it with exquisite technique and it just flies into the bottom corner. Berardi, who has been at Sassuolo his entire career, just signed a new deal. So in the same window that they've sold Scamacca to West Ham, Raspadori, another of their stars, to to Napoli, Berardi is staying. Although in his post-match interview, he made it clear that that wasn't his first wish. Oh. He had wanted to leave. they just couldn't find the right kind of offer or the right club for him. So it was quite funny that he'd signed this 5-year deal and was like, "Yeah, we'll see what happens next summer." But wonderful goal from Berardi.
As you say, so many moments to choose from in a Serie A weekend that saw a grand total of, checks notes, 12 goals. Yikes! All right, Jules.
Has to be Kylian Mbappe scoring after 9 seconds in the game against Lille. The combination worked on training, copied on Bournemouth and on a few other of your teams. But just wonderful stuff straight from kickoff. Incredible, and setting the team up for another amazing performance, to be honest, and an amazing win.
Excellent. All right, very good. Let's start our roundup then. First up, live from Old Trafford, it's Raphael Honigstein.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
All right, Monday night, Raphael Honigstein was at Old Trafford straight after the match. We caught up with him for his thoughts on the Bundesliga, and first a quick line on what he'd seen on the pitch at the Theatre of Dreams.
I think that Liverpool played into United's hands a little bit by starting slowly, by losing the 50-50s, by having a little bit of tired legs, it seemed, in midfield. But I think United had a very good game plan, and it worked out beautifully for them.
Mm. Hear me out here, Raf, but watching the game, I was just remembering, this is what, Klopp's 7th season at Anfield. It's their worst ever start to a season under him. And I was just thinking back to the 7th season he had at Borussia Dortmund and how that played out. Too early, yeah? Too early? Or are there any hints that maybe...
I think you've gone too early, James. But yes, it is unusual for managers to keep a certain level over a number of years. I think the problem at Dortmund was that it was a constant rebuilding process. Every year they lost one or two players. And also what was a revolutionary system had become quite commonplace by the time he left in 2015. So I'd be a little bit hesitant to say this is sort of his swan song or the dawn of the Klopp era. But injury is certainly a factor. I think Liverpool looked a little bit light in midfield. They didn't really have that many options to change the game. They had, in his own words, centre-backs and young kids on the bench, mostly, neither of whom were really much use in this game. And I think that is the concern, that with the World Cup coming up, with games every 3 days, from now until May, the squad and midfield look a little bit light. Mm-hmm. I think that is the biggest issue, because Liverpool, as we know, and as Klopp has mentioned a million times, are a team that live off their own energy. And I think if that energy drops just a little bit, then they're not quite the same team. We saw that in that COVID season when injuries meant that they had to rotate a lot in midfield, and they never really had their proper midfield starting because Henderson had to play centre-back, Fabinho had to play centre-back. And you see it again now. Javier Elliott, James Milner, Jordan Henderson. It's not really the sort of three players that you really want in a big, massive game. Not that combination anyway. I think individually, all great players. The three of them together, I think you're a little bit short.
Okay. Rafa, let's talk about the Bundesliga, because, one or two remarkable results there this weekend. First of all, Klopp's old side, Dortmund. So they were 2-0 up in the 89th minute. And I see that Lee Buchanan got a consolation goal for Werder Bremen. That's nice.
He did. And then
in the 93rd minute, unbelievably, Werder Bremen managed to snatch a point against Borussia Dortmund. Boy, I bet Dortmund were unhappy about that.
No, they were very, very unhappy. They should have never thrown away 2 points. But then
it got even worse. Why am I laughing? Extraordinary. Oliver Berg.
Oliver Berg come. Berg alleine vom Tor. Berg. Tor. 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 Tor für Werder. Es ist unglaublich. There's his knee to Vasten.
Oliver Berg coming up, and for the second week in a row, with a late, late goal to cap what was the first time ever that a team had thrown away a game they were leading 2-0 in the 89th minute. Extraordinary. Dortmund going to Dortmund, Rafa.
Yes, but they find new ways of Dortmunding, because against Freiburg they were super efficient. Against Bremen they looked super efficient. I think they had 3 or 4 shots on target, scored with 2 of them. Didn't play well at all, but you're thinking, okay, Terzic has worked out a way of playing pretty badly, but winning, which is not the worst thing in the world. Bremen were better throughout. They just left it very, very late to score the goals, but it was thoroughly deserved. And I think what's worse than the collapse and worse than throwing his points away, of course, it does hurt. But what is worse, in my view, is that the performance was so bad. And the midfield looked so short on quality. We literally have Jude Bellingham carrying this whole midfield, which I don't think is fair on him and is not sustainable. That you think, where's this Dortmund team going to go? They have a lot of firepower up front. They have Adeyemi to come back. Reina came back and looked pretty good. There is real quality. But as a functioning unit defensively, and I mean that sort of from midfield onwards, it just doesn't look like a team that you have any confidence in winning most of the games. So it was very disheartening, I think, for Dortmund fans and for neutrals who want Dortmund to push Bayern and to do well in the Champions League.
Werder Bremen must have enjoyed it, though. Interesting collection of players they've got there.
Yeah, they've got really good players. I mean, their newly promoted side, of course, big tradition and big success in the past in the Bundesliga, so it doesn't really feel as if they're a newly promoted team. They have also this great support. They have a really good coach in Ole Werner, who took them up. Quiet guy, but very highly rated in German football. And they played with a kind of fearlessness and organisation that not many teams just show up at the Signal Iduna Park and just play as if they're the home side. So hugely impressive, really good start to the season, and thoroughly deserved.
Excellent. All right. Dortmund, with their issues continuing, could be worse. They could be Bayer Leverkusen, who are currently pointless and goalless down at the bottom of the Bundesliga. RB Leipzig also with a bad weekend, losing to Union Berlin, while Bayern Munich, Rafa, Bayern Munich roll on. Quite extraordinary. They sell Lewandowski, and the following season they're averaging 5 goals a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what Julian Nagelsmann kind of predicted, or at least hoped for, that Bayern without Lewandowski are even more difficult to contain. Lewandowski scores the goals, but sometimes doesn't, or didn't perhaps provide the kind of movement and interchange play that Nagelsmann wanted. Now you have this very flexible 4-2-2-2 formation with 2 slightly more advanced forwards and 2 forwards behind them. This week it wasn't Musiala, he was injured, but then Leroy Sané comes in and plays absolutely brilliantly with a bit of fire in his belly and throwing a great goal and looking busy throughout. Mane keeps on, you know, being very, very difficult to handle. And then you have the likes of Müller scoring sometimes, and then you have Serge Gnabry scoring sometimes, and then Kingsley Coman comes with a goal. I mean, there's just so much going on. The only problem is that it almost feels a little bit cruel. It almost feels like shooting fish in a barrel or a cat toying with a half-dead mouse. This Bayern team are on a different level to Bochum. They managed to lose 4-2 in February, but that was when it felt as if the title was already won and they slowed down. And their big lesson from what happened last season, second half of the season, was we basically have to be our own opponents. We have to be so good when it comes to the squad, the competition, the depth, that no one can slow down, because otherwise somebody else will take their place. Unfortunately for everyone else, Bayern seem to have learned that lesson and got a lot of things right in the transfer market after having 2 or 3 years when they made mistakes and could have perhaps been punished, but weren't, because those below them had even bigger problems. But the way they're playing at the moment, the way the squad is constructed, the way Nagelsmann is gelling with the players, it's going to be very, very hard to see them drop too many points. But I have to say, I think I said exactly the same at the beginning of last season, because they also started incredibly well, playing some beautiful football, and then they really lost their way after the winter break. So not all is lost for the rest of the league.
You're off to Germany, Rafa, Tuesday morning. And hopefully we'll be catching up with you there to maybe give us your view on the Champions League draw Thursday night, featuring the likes of Dortmund and Bayern and Bayer Leverkusen.
I'd love to, James.
Raphael Honigstein, everybody. Looking forward to that hot take live stream of the Euro draws. Crikey. Not sure how that's going to work or if it'll work. But you can see it live on Twitter and YouTube, I'm told. That's quite exciting. Which YouTube, producer Charlie? The Athletic's YouTube channel and the Athletic's Twitter account. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? Good. Let's hear about Ligue 1.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Julien Laurence.
James.
Yes. So last week we were talking about all the unhappiness at Paris Saint-Germain. Any hopes from their rivals that the Parisians were going to implode were dashed very quickly this Sunday, though.
Yeah, it took 9 seconds, as we mentioned in our moment of the week, for Kylian Mbappe of the weekend, for Kylian Mbappe to score that first goal. And the second quickest goal in French football history, by 1 second. Kylian took 9 seconds. Michel Rio took eight seconds 30 years ago to score. To be fair, watching the game, we thought it was 8 seconds, but he was given at 9 seconds. Literally, Neymar with the kickoff passed the ball backwards towards Verratti, and then Neymar sort of pretends to go forward, then stops his run, comes back towards Verratti. Verratti passes the ball back to him. Then he lays the ball off for Messi, who then find the through ball above in behind the lead defense for Mbappe, who'd run from the kind of left-hand side, who then loves the keeper. It's amazing. They worked on it at training, Galtier said it and Marquinhos said it after the game. But they obviously copied it. Remember Bournemouth against Fulham last season, scored exactly the same goal. Vinicius tried it for Real Madrid against Manchester City. And we have Cliftonville, for the fans of Irish football, who scored exactly the same goal. We had it in the Eredivisie as well. So this is not their idea. They just saw other teams doing it, and they noticed that the Lille backline was usually very high on kickoff when they didn't have kickoff. So they said, hey, why not we try it? And it was to perfection. And if you see the camera angle from behind Messi, you see his ball is incredible for Mbappe. And then you saw the reaction of all of them, because clearly, having worked a lot about it on training, for it to pull it off like this in that game, made them clearly all very happy. And Kylian was not grumpy anymore, and Neymar was happy. There was no penalties. Everybody passed the ball to each other. Neymar scored 2 goals and 3 assists. Messi had 1 goal and 2 assists. Mbappe had his hat-trick too. It was pretty special night to finish on it. Thierry Henry on French television after the game said that cohesion for him was the word to sum up the PSG performance. And he said he'd never see them play as a team like that, which I agree. And L'Equipe in their ratings and Le Parisien were similar. Gave them all 3 9, so 9 for Neymar, 9 for Mbappe, and 9 for Messi.
I mean, you have to, don't you? You can imagine if you give one of them 9.5, spark carnage again in the dressing
room. So L'Equipe don't give 0.5. Le Parisien do, and I think Mbappe had 9.5 and the other two 9, but just because it's Le Parisien, it's Mbappe. But yeah, L'Equipe not having halves, you know, it was fair to give everybody 9.
Is it an emergency for Europe and you know, Champions League contenders, this 9-9-9?
It's a warning.
Jules, quite something when the winners of the past two Ligue 1 title races meet and it is as one-sided as this. The final score 7-1.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, when you concede after 9 seconds against PSG, even when you're at home like Lille, it's going to be difficult. Paulo Fonseca got criticised quite heavily in France for his tactics and just being so open the way they wanted to play against PSG, where you knew that this was very dangerous. And they try to play Lille, and that's what Fonseca does. And he said after the game, like, why would I change? Because we play against PSG, this is not how it works. But the lack of pressure on whoever was on the ball for PSG was shocking. The defending was horrible from the keeper to pretty much the whole sort of back six, if you want. So there were issues. But to be fair, when PSG play like that, when Vitinha is in that kind of form, even Verratti was a bit more quiet than the others. But it's, I mean, it would be very hard, even for a Lille team at its best, with a very defensive mindset, to be able to cope. But yeah, they played into PSG's hands for sure.
Also this weekend, another defeat for Monaco, defeat for Nice as well, but wins for Lyon and Marseille. Who impressed you?
I mean, just to start on Favre, because it reminded me of the live show that we had in Manchester, where I quoted our friend Lucien Favre, who is getting older and older now, and Nice was so bad on Sunday that I felt a little bit vindicated that I said how it was so far for Nice on the show. Marseille were interesting because it was Alexis Sanchez's first start, home debut as well, and clearly the 63,000 people who were at the Velodrome were there just for him. And they were not disappointed because even if he can't last the whole 90 minutes, he was very good in his, you know, in his usual style. And I think he would be very good for Marseille, who, by the way, are about to sign Eric Bailly from Manchester United. So they're trying with not much money to put a really competitive side now to be able to do well in the Champions League and kind of compete in the league as well. And even if this two-door side is still very, the way they play, it's all a bit messy at times. But that was a really good win for them. And the Velodrome loved it. They love Alexis, who's the new hero, and rightly so. So that was promising. Monaco were shocking, but Lens was so good against them. And Lyon, it's always the same feeling, that it's mixed feeling. They have some really good, the second half was pretty good. And the first half was terrible, where I think Troyes were the better side.
Mm. Jules, also I saw this weekend no less than 11 red cards across Ligue 1's matches.
8 in Spain, James. 8 in Spain.
18 in Spain?
No, 8 in Spain.
Oh, right. I thought you said 18. That would be a lot. So 11 in Ligue 1, that's the most in any match day, Jules, in the last 30 years.
Yeah, crazy. Really crazy. We had 2 in the games, 3 in the game. We had 3 as well in the Saint-Etienne 6-0 defeat in the second division on Friday night. Yeah, people are angry in France, you know, with all the inflation, all the problems and everything. I think the referees are as bad as ever. Some of those red cards were really, really severe. Or like, you know, strict from the referee's point of view. But yeah, we're waiting to see if it continues or not. We had a few the weekend before, not as high as 11. But yeah, it's interesting. Oh, but often in August, to be honest, when the season starts, I guess some players maybe are like high on trying to do well and everything. But there were some really bad tackles. There was a few bad referee decisions, to be fair, as well.
All right then, Jules. You're in France at the moment. What are you doing there when you're back?
I'm back tomorrow. Still the last few days of holidays to see my newborn baby niece. So yeah, that's why we came over. So I'll be with you on Thursday. But now
I thought you were saying niece are rubbish.
That's one niece you do enjoy seeing. My God. Yeah.
So you're insulting my family now. I see you when I come back.
Wait. All right. Thanks, Jules. Au revoir. Next up, what do you fancy? Spain or Italy?
Italy, please.
Oh, they're nice. There you go.
Yeah, so many goals. That's why. So many. I mean, the most attacking league in Europe. Who said they were not defensive anymore? Not me.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Ukrainian Premier League kicks off today, actually, this Tuesday, with Shakhtar Donetsk hosting Metalist. That'll be at the Olympic Stadium in Kyiv. No fans there. That's part of the protocols that are going to be followed at each game. They've got evacuation plans, fixed shelters no more than 500 metres from each stadium. A script for stadium announcers in the event that air raid sirens sound. Obviously a very serious business this, but it's felt that they need to get the season underway, A, because the clubs will go out of business otherwise, and secondly, just as a message about the fact that the spirit of Ukraine continues in the face of the Russian invasion. Shakhtar are also going to be involved in Thursday's Champions League group stage draw. Their European home games, though, are going to be played in Warsaw. Best of luck to everybody with that. Italy then. All right. James, not many goals this weekend. Not many at all.
Yeah, but I think if you watched the Roma-Cremonese game, Roma could have scored 3 or 4. You had Stephen Elshawari hitting the bar. A little bit similar to their last performance against Salernitana where Dybala hit the post. So created a lot of chances, didn't take them. And yeah, that's also been, I would say, the story of Inter's season as well. Certainly at the weekend before last against Lecce, when they only were able to win 2-1 with a stoppage time goal. But again, created loads of chances, which they didn't take. So it's one of those statistics that I don't think tells the whole story.
Mm. Almost as many, well, actually, only slightly more goals in Serie A than there were red cards in France. Extraordinary. Inter with a 3-0 win over Spezia. That's 2 wins out of 2 for the Nerazzurri. Further evidence of Romelu Lukaku's, the wisdom of his decision to return to San Siro. A lovely little bit of interplay between him and Lautaro Martinez. I think that was Inter's first goal, wasn't it, against Spezia?
Yeah, that kind of long ball from Barella. Lukaku running onto it and nods it down behind him for Lautaro to just hit first time from outside the box into the...
Boy, does he hit it.
Exactly, into the goal. Lula, as that partnership was known when it was first put together by Antonio Conte, delivering. It's very interesting actually watching Lukaku playing for this Inter team because I would say that you know, most of the personnel is the same, apart from the wide players, because Perisic has gone. Hakimi was obviously sold when he was sold. But it's an Inter side that plays a lot higher up the pitch, plays more possession. Certainly in Conte's last Scudetto-winning season, he felt the best way to get the most out of Lukaku was to play deeper and hit teams on the transition with him facing goal and using his pace. And in this, you're seeing quite a lot of long balls going up to him, for him to either hold up and lay off or for him to knock down. So it shows that he can play different styles within a 3-5-2. Obviously, it is still different from Chelsea, where, you know, he was kind of the lone front man up there. Certainly helps him having Lautaro playing close to him. But encouraging signs for Inter. The big story around them was that Skriniar is not going anywhere. Their centre-back, who's they've been talks pretty much all summer between Inter and PSG about him. The club have basically said, okay, no, we've sold this teenager to Chelsea, Cesare Casadè, who's part of Italy's Euro under-19 side, part of Inter's Scudetto-winning under-19 team under Christian Kivu this summer. And they're just going to go for a low-cost centre-back, who's probably going to be Francesco Acerbi. Let's see what the last week of the window has in store for Inter, but I don't think there'll be any fireworks.
Well, this weekend with Milan drawing 1-1 at Atalanta, not a disastrous result. They also drew there last season and went on to win the title. But Juve only managing a 0-0 with Sampdoria. The only other team that's had a perfect start to the season are Napoli, who beat Monza, Berlusconi's Monza, 4-0. James, this is kind of remarkable what's going on down in Naples. Obviously, it's very early on in the season, but given the number of players that have left and given the man who's been the star so far, a lot of surprises.
Yeah, there was a lot of negativity around Napoli earlier in the summer. Luciano Spalletti got heckled on stage at their pre-season event in the Dolomites. He was told to wake up by fans who were kind of upset with Aurelio De Laurentiis, the owner, for letting Koulibaly, Insigne and Mertens go. Three of the icons, I suppose, of that Napoli team that had come very close to winning the league under Maurizio Sarri, but had also won things under Gattuso and Rafa Benitez. But the signings look very good at the moment. There's the centre-back, Kim, who did Gangnam Style as his initiation song. The one who's getting a lot of the plaudits is Kvyat Kvaratskhelia, the Georgian winger that they signed for. AKA Cavadadonna or Caravaggio as well. I like that one. and he's just been electric. He's been signed to replace Insigne, who's obviously gone off to play for Toronto FC with Federico Bernardeschi. Whereas Insigne, you always knew what he was going to do, a little bit like Aaron Robben, in that he would cut inside from the left and then he would either try and hit the far corner with a right foot shot, the famous tira giro, or just play one of those passes for the other winger. You know, it was Callejon for many years to get in behind. With Kvaratskhelia, you have no idea what he's going to do. You know, he's two-footed. He loves to take on his man. Gets to the byline, he comes inside. I mean, he's scored three goals. No one in Napoli's history has scored three goals in their first two appearances for the club. And these three goals are a header, left-footed shot, and a right-footed shot.
Mm.
Which
was a classic Insigne-style tira giro itself, no?
Yes, that the first goal against Monza was kind of classic. It didn't have as much curl as some of Insigne's goals, but yeah, certainly cut inside, find the far right corner.
Zielinski prolunga di tacco, Kvaratskhelia a spazio, destro, giro! Ancora, Kvicha, Kvaratskhelia, il Napoli è davanti!
But Napoli looks very good. I mean, I love Spalletti. His football is just so, it can be so pleasing to watch. You know, just one touch, moves from their own penalty area right to the end. And he's just such a great character. He gave an interview this week in his house where he's got that incredible kind of wall of football shirts that he's just collected over the years. And then he pulled on this kind of Chechen shepherd's outfit as well, because he'd been given it as a gift when he was playing, when he was coaching Zenit St. Petersburg. He's just a lot of fun. So, yeah, Napoli have won back-to-back games. Okay, games you'd expect them to win. Verona, Monza. It'll be a bigger test this weekend when they play Fiorentina, I think, in Florence. And obviously a lot of people remember that they won the first eight games of last season as well, and were kind of early front runners for the league. So, yeah, we'll have to see this Napoli team get a bit stress tested, but certainly for now, they're really exciting to watch.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Sunday night when they take on Fiorentina. Fiorentina, who only managed a 0-0 draw this weekend in the Tuscan derby with local rivals Empoli. At Empoli, the other huge game coming up next weekend is actually on Saturday, and that'll see Roma up against Juventus. Juve with the 0-0 draw against Sampdoria. Roma, a narrow victory over Cremonese with Smaldini getting the goal, but the injuries mounting up already for Jose Mourinho's side.
Yeah, Mourinho was talking about this after the game, because Roma did create a lot of chances. I said they hit the woodwork, but you could see they were getting unsettled. They looked frustrated, looked like they might lose their heads at one stage. And Mourinho said that the mood in the camp had been quite low going into the game because Gini Wijnaldum, one of their big signings, albeit on loan from PSG, so no money spent apart from on his wages, he'd broken his leg in training. And the players warmed up with Forza Gini t-shirts, and Mourinho posted on Instagram a pic of him holding up a Roma shirt with the same message. And then he composed his own underneath this Instagram post, calling the reporters who'd suggested that the young player, Felix Afenyajan, had injured Wijnaldum. And Mourinho called them real scum. Not mincing his words there. And then Zaniolo looked like he's back to his best. We already saw that against Salernitana last weekend. But these, you know, storming runs from inside his own half, he falls over. He's brought down during one of them, and it looked initially like he dislocated his shoulder. So after tearing the cruciate ligaments in both his knees, he's seemed determined to do all the joints in his body. But afterwards, Zaniolo again took to Instagram and said, to those who were hoping I would be injured and out for a long time again, don't worry, I'll see you again in 3 weeks. So, it'll be a big miss for Zaniolo and Wijnaldum to be out for the game against Juventus in Turin. Dybala obviously going back to play against his former club. Dybala still yet to score, but has been playing some silky stuff, very much in his style. And I suppose they'll go to Juventus and not be particularly afraid of what they're playing, because Juventus themselves have big injuries. Di Maria, who was the star of their first win of the season last week against Sassuolo, he's out. Pogba obviously is still injured too. And Allegri, after a very disappointing 0-0 on Monday night against Sampdoria, was saying, we hope to see Pogba and Chiesa before the World Cup. But failing that, we'd like to see them in January. So really kind of giving the idea that we might not see two of Juventus' best players for 4 months. So, yeah, I think in some respects, this is a good time for Roma to play against Juventus. Let's see.
Okay. By the way, Golazzo Live will be returning the weekend after on the Saturday with a doubleheader. It'll be Fiorentina against Juventus, another of the bitter rivalries traditionally in Serie A. That's at 2 o'clock UK time, followed by, Milan-Inter. Crikey. All right. Keep an eye out for that one then on BT Sport, of course. Very good. Let's conclude today's Totally Football Show Euro edition with the latest from España.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson. Continúa el balón desde atrás, desde la cueva, para marcar Gerard Moreno. Gol! Gol!
Del Villarreal!
Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
Hola. Thank you for your patience, Alvaro. We're ready for your close-up. La Liga. And who's top of the table?
Villarreal.
Woof. Yep. 2-0 winners this weekend against Atletico Madrid at Atletico Madrid, which is Unai Emery's first victory over Diego Simeone after 16 attempts. Wow.
I guess it was worth the wait for Villarreal because they won at Civitas Metropolitano, the new name of the ground, by the way, with an impressive display, I would say. I think that Atletico had their chances too, especially Mateus Cunha had a couple of good chances denied, both by the crossbar and Jerónimo Rulli as well, a goalkeeper that we know that he tends to be a little bit sloppy sometimes, but he was very good at Atletico de Madrid ground. And Villarreal got one of those victories that should somehow set the foundations for the belief that they can finish in the fourth spot this season. They are not playing in the Champions League, they are playing in the Conference League. Therefore, they'll be able to rotate a little bit more in Europe, I'm guessing. Gerard Moreno, last season, he barely featured. He was barely to his best because he sustained plenty of muscle injuries. He scored this time at Wanda at Civitas Metropolitano, and it looks like his old injury is gone. And Villarreal has signed a good amount of players. Morales, for example, former Levante footballer, he's there and he's on the bench right now for Villarreal, but he can be a great addition for Villarreal in the second halves. I think that they've got many elements to believe that they can do very well this season. And there is another thing by Villarreal that I would like to say, which is very important in my opinion, because as a supporter of a club that normally has their second team in the third division or the second division, I know how important it is for Villarreal to have their second team in the second division of Spanish football, because those youngsters, they are competing with professionals and they are close to being very ready to play in the top flight. So Villarreal having their second team there in the second division is a great asset for Villarreal for the future. So I think that this is going to be very important for them. Unai Emery, we know that he hasn't qualified any club for the Champions League apart from PSG for a long time, probably a decade. He didn't do it with Arsenal. He didn't qualify Sevilla ever for the Champions League, but he was playing the Champions League, I believe, because he was winning the Europa League. So this is a challenge for him as well, the day-to-day, how weekly he can make sure that his players are giving their best. But it looks very promising for Villarreal. And when it comes to Atletico, very quickly, the saddest thing about Atletico is that their ultra fan base are still just doing terrible things. At the end of the game, some Atletico de Madrid players were just warming up and doing some post-competitive exercises, and Mario Hermoso, center back of Atletico de Madrid, was very badly insulted by some fans of Atletico ultras, and he went after them. Basically, he tried to jump over the fence and go after them, and the security had to stop this guy. And Atletico de Madrid ultras, they've been just hitting the headlines for the wrong reasons lately. I remember at the Etihad when one of the supporters did the Nazi salute back in winter. This summer, they were showing a very big paper with saying Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't come to Atletico de Madrid. And in that picture, there was another supporter doing the Nazi salute. They have killed supporters in the past, one in 1998, another one in 2015. So yeah. I think that Atletico de Madrid has to deal with their ultras because Barcelona and Real Madrid kicked them out seasons ago. Atletico hasn't done it yet, and it's time to do it.
One of the many big problems facing that club then. Excuse my ignorance, Alvaro. What happens to a second team, for example, Villarreal's, if they get promoted from the second division, or is it impossible for them to get promoted?
It is impossible, but that's a very good question, of course. It is impossible that they get promoted, and I believe that they cannot play in the cup either. But anyway, as I said, it's a great asset to have them there because they are competing with professionals, some of them international footballers. So the second they are getting the opportunity in the big team, they are ready. So this is better than having an under-23, for example. And I know it because as an Athletic Club Bilbao fan, when our second team is in the second division, this has really positive repercussions for Athletic de Bilbao first team.
Yeah, it's the same now with Juventus. Juventus do have an under-23 team, but it is the equivalent of a Spanish B team, and they play in the third division. And, you know, as disappointing as the 0-0 against Sampdoria was on Monday night, you see players like Fabio Miretti, coming through Fagioli as well. I know that they signed Rovella from Genoa, but basically they've got this young crop of Italians coming through. who have had game time, regular game time, playing men's football in the third division. And they are allowed to play in the kind of, I would say it's the equivalent of the Papa John's trophy, if that's still a thing, in England. Yeah, for the first time really since, I don't know, Claudio Marchisio, they're starting to get players who are coming through and look like they could be first team players for a long time. So yeah, it's good.
And it is happening, James, with Nicolas Jackson, a player from Villarreal who has started in the first two games. He comes straight from the B team and he's really performing really well for Villarreal in the first couple of games.
Excellent. Meantime, the big two winning 4-1 this weekend in La Liga. Real Madrid away at Celta Vigo. Barcelona in Basque country against Real Sociedad. Lewandowski with his first two Barcelona goals, the first after 47 seconds. And then for the fourth Barca goal, Alvaro, what did he do?
Well, it was some sort of a backheel pass. His contribution is there with a ball to Ansu Fati. I thought that it was offside when I watched the goal for the first time, but then the goal counted. And it is very good to see that Lewandowski has had an instant synergy, not only with Ansu Fati, but also with Pedri, because against Pumas, the Mexican side that played Joan Gamper, the tournament unveiling the season for Barcelona, Pedri and Lewandowski had a very good connection. This time it was with Ansu Fati. We all knew that Robert Lewandowski was going to score goals for Barcelona. I thought that maybe he was going to have a bit of a bad influence in the way Barcelona plays, because sometimes Lewandowski doesn't link up that much, or saying that in a different way, he demands a lot of ball supply, crosses and all that, but Barcelona haven't changed their game dramatically for Lewandowski. Is Lewandowski adapting to the game and is working so far? He scored the goal after a minute. The thing is that after scoring that goal, you could have thought that Barcelona would have the control of the game, but that didn't happen. The first half didn't have any compass. I would say that Real Sociedad and Barcelona both had their options. Real Sociedad was very vibrant, definitely. They scored the equalizer. And then it was in the second half that Barcelona regained control, not only because the substitutions worked with Rafinha and Ansu Fati coming in, but also because Pedri took the reins of the game. And when Pedri does that, then Barcelona plays very well. The three-man centre-back line for Barcelona is not quite working yet. I don't know if when Jules Koundé is finally registered, Xavi will go back to the 4-3-3. That's a possibility. You know, I think that at the end, what made the difference in this game was the firepower, James. You have a team that can bring out from the bench in Rafinha or Ansu Fati, and that obviously keys the game in favour of one of the sides. And Ansu Fati, I tell you, he is not 100% yet. There is a big difference between the Ansu Fati that in September 2020 he broke into the scene just killing a game against Ukraine after 30 minutes, killing a game against Valencia after 10 minutes. This Ansu Fati is different. He's still regaining his fitness, but he always had an eye for the goal. His scoring ratio in La Liga is sensational. And the best possible news for Barcelona is that Ansu Fati is back. There is a lot of, I said before, hope on this player, not only by Barcelona, but also by Luis Enrique. It's quite bizarre than when Spain lost against Italy in the semifinals of Euro 2020. Luis Enrique made a reference to Ansu Fati. Ansu Fati, last summer, he was already in his mind, despite having been a year injured. So the hopes around this guy are massive. And Ansu Fati, well, he's scoring, he's getting better little by little. And this is very good news for Barcelona.
You mentioned Jules Koundé. How are they going with the business of actually getting him registered?
Well, they haven't done it yet. Xavi is annoyed. He said that he's not annoyed at the club, but he's annoyed at the situation itself.
Right. And if they don't get him registered by the end of the transfer market, is it true that he leaves?
I believe that he's got a close saying in his contract that he could leave Barcelona, yes. And now the club is trying to explore new formulas. Aubameyang, for example, leaving to Chelsea. Memphis Depay leaving, hopefully not on a free for Barcelona, because they would like to get some money for him. Or the usual talk of Frenkie de Jong. But Aubameyang and Memphis right now seem to be the key just to unchain the situation with Jules Koundé.
All right. Two levers that would pull some levers. Very good. Real Madrid, meantime, 4-1 winners away at Celta Vigo, with Luka Modric doing Luka Modric things still. That's two wins out of two for Real Madrid. The Casemiro departure
How much is that going to impact them, do you think, Alvaro? And how much of a surprise was it in Madrid that the club were so quick to sell him?
There was a little bit of a surprise when the news broke. Soon we knew that Casemiro was up for it because the offer he got at Manchester United was way better than what he is making at Real Madrid. And we all know that Florentino Pérez as well, he is reluctant to extend contracts to the over 30s. We saw that with Cristiano Ronaldo, we saw that with Sergio Ramos, that's why these players ended up leaving. And Casemiro probably feared that this could happen to him if he didn't give an instant performance for Real Madrid, and obviously he wanted to secure the end of his career with a very lucrative contract. He left Real Madrid. I think that this is a big loss for Real Madrid, I really do, because one thing that defined Casemiro and many Real Madrid players, to be fair, is that in the big nights they were up for the challenge, and it's not easy to find players like this. Real Madrid won the Champions League because they had many specialists, no hybrid players at all, I mean, with the exception maybe of David Alaba, who could play as a centre-back, a left-back, a midfielder. But the rest of the players in Real Madrid, they are big specialists, and Casemiro was one of them. So will Tchouaméni be that player? It's still to be seen. To be honest, he played really well against Celta in the weekend. His performance went in crescendo. I think that he physically he's very strong. But Casemiro's loss, I think that he's a bad loss for Real Madrid. Seriously, the thing is that the fee is very good as well. So if Real Madrid wants, that I don't think so, they could try to find another holding midfielder. But yeah, so far it's working, obviously, but Real Madrid is still to be tested in the big nights because they have had only two easy opponents, Almeria number one and then Celta number two.
Okay, they've got Espanyol next weekend, not sure how much tougher that'll be. Atletico Madrid will be looking to bounce back when they visit Gennaro Gattuso's Valencia. What catches your eye next weekend, Alvaro?
That's a very good question, actually. I am very curious about how Barcelona are going to feature at home because they couldn't beat Rayo Vallecano. So probably my eyes will be set there. And of course, whatever Athletic Club Bilbao does, the truth is that the team is doing very well. They've got 4 points. And I am expecting them to keep this good level. Ernesto Valverde has decided to use a very creative triangle in midfield, and that is working so far.
Okay, they're away at Cadiz. Excellent. That's on Monday. Super. Very good. Well, between now and then, there's the second legs of the Euro playoffs for Champions League, Europa Conference League, and Thursday night, the draw for the group stages. As mentioned, the Athletic's Twitter feed and YouTube channel will be featuring a live reaction to who gets whom on Thursday evening. So do join us for that. For now, though, it's many, many thanks to Raphael Honigstein and Julien Laurent earlier on, and James Horncastle and Alvaro Romeo and producer Charlie. And you, listener, will be back Thursday with a regular Totally show. So perhaps you'll join us then. For now, though, anyway, from all of us here, it's adieu.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.